This is Jay Sekulow. The United States pulls out of the UN's Human Rights Council.
Live from Washington, D.C., Jay Sekulow Live.
The United Nations must reform if it is to be an effective partner in confronting threats to sovereignty, security, and prosperity.
Phone lines are open for your questions right now. Call 1-800-684-3110.
If the Human Rights Council is going to attack countries that uphold human rights and shield countries that abuse human rights, then America should not provide it with any credibility. Instead, we will continue to lead on human rights outside the misnamed Human Rights Council.
And now, Chief Counsel for the American Center for Law and Justice, Jay Sekulow.
The United Nations Human Rights Council is notorious for one thing, bringing actions and resolutions against the state of Israel. In fact, if you look at the history of the UN Human Rights Council, and I'm happy to announce that the United States, through Secretary of State Mike Pompeo and Ambassador Nikki Haley, who's our permanent representative to the United Nations, the United States is officially withdrawing from the UN Human Rights Council. President Bush, by the way, did not participate in the Human Rights Council. President Obama did. Among the reasons for the U.S. withdrawal is that Nikki Haley said that the council has failed to address serious human rights abuses as well as the chronic bias against Israel. She noted that the withdrawal follows a 17-month good faith effort to address the problem at the council, yet no progress has been made. As it relates to the situation with Israel, you have to understand this. And by the way, we participate in the UN Human Rights Council through a European Center for Law and Justice. We'll talk about that later, but here's what you have. The Human Rights Council passed 5 resolutions against Israel in its last sitting, more than the number passed against North Korea, Iran, and Syria combined. Let me say that again. They passed 5 resolutions against Israel, more than the numbers passed against North Korea, Iran, and Syria combined. Jordan, you followed this very closely. The fact is, the UN's Human Rights Council has been used as basically an attack on the state of Israel.
Well, it's a mockery of human rights and what it means to have a Human Rights Council. When you look at the membership made up of these 3-year terms, I mean, these are some of these members here. You would just be surprised by that they would have membership there. And so you've got countries for instance, Saudi Arabia, who, yes, could be an ally of the U.S., but certainly does not have human rights to be proud of. And so the list goes on. Democratic Republic of Congo, Syria is sometimes on this list. I mean, it's a rotating list of human rights abusers because, unfortunately, most of the world's governments, even most of the member states of the UN, do not have good human rights records. And so I just want to make clear to everybody, this Human Rights Council, we tried to save as the U.S. government. They tried to make a good faith effort. Yep. To try and change, and instead it's continued to be the anti-Israel Human Rights Council, and that was that. They said no more. And what does that mean? It means the funding that comes, $17 million a year comes right out of the UN Human Rights Council. They rely on that U.S. funding. That's gone. And again, when you don't have the U.S. as part of something, quickly the meaningfulness of an institution wanes.
Yeah, so Than is our designated representative from our European Center for Law and Justice to the UN. You've been at the Human Rights Council. What's your thought about this move?
A completely appropriate move by the United States to remove the weight and influence of the United States from a clearly tainted council. I'll just reference one country that Jordan mentioned, the Democratic Republic of Congo. Jay, they were added this year. Since Ambassador Haley issued that warning, Jay, they were added at a time when mass graves were being discovered in their country. That was the stalwarts of human rights that was added to the council. This is a good move by the United States.
I mean, just some others, too. I mean, you got Nigeria, Pakistan, Iraq, Egypt, Cuba, Afghanistan.
On the Human Rights Council.
These are supposed to be countries respecting human rights around the world, and they can't do it in their own country.
All right, we're going to take your calls when we come back. Your reaction to this move by the president pulling us out of the UN Human Rights Council. Also, your reaction to the president's signing an executive order to stop family separation. Our phone lines are open, 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. We'll take your calls and comments when we come back from the break. Again, 1-800-684-3110. President signs an executive order. At the same time, pulls us out of the UN Human Rights Council. A lot to talk about.
The life of an American pastor hangs in the balance. Pastor Andrew Brunson is on trial in Turkey. As you know, Pastor Andrew is facing charges of, quote, Christianization, on trial for simply living out his Christian faith. He could spend the rest of his life in a Turkish prison. At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're aggressively advocating for Pastor Andrew's freedom. We've mobilized our international offices. We're working directly with the State Department and alongside members of Congress. The Vice President is involved, and we've submitted a critical legal document to the United Nations. Stand with the American Center for Law and Justice. Fight for the freedom of Pastor Andrew. It's time to bring an end to this sham trial. It's time for Pastor Andrew to come home. Add your name to our petition right now online at aclj.org. It's a historic move. Now the United States has moved its embassy in Israel from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem, Israel's true capital. The state of Israel and its very right to exist is a linchpin issue not only in the Middle East, but represents a critical issue to the world at large. Israel is facing unprecedented challenges. Enemies abound. ISIS, Hamas, Hezbollah, and Iran all pledge to wipe Israel from the face of the earth. In his new book, New York Times bestselling author Jay Sekulow presents a powerful political and historical rationale for the existence of Israel as a sovereign nation. Jerusalem, a biblical and historical case for the Jewish capital, presents clear, irrefutable evidence to remove any doubt about Israel's right to exist. And the book dispels legal myths purported by Israel's enemies. Get your copy today, Jerusalem, a Biblical and Historical Case for the Jewish Capital. Available now at Amazon or Barnes & Noble.
President of the United States standing up for human rights at the UN by pulling out of the farce that's called the Human Rights Council. Some of the greatest abusers of human rights in the world are on this council. They have more resolutions against Israel, I said this earlier, than any other country. It's basically that's their reason for existence. Listen to what Mike Pompeo had to say.
The council's continued and well-documented bias against Israel is unconscionable. Since its creation, the council has adopted more resolutions condemning Israel than against the rest of the world combined.
And there you go. It's about as strong as you can get. Now, at the same time, when we're taking your calls on all of this at 1-800-684-3110, after we went off air yesterday, though, the President of the United States resolved the situation at the border with families. So let's get Jordan's going to give us an analysis on that. It's complicated, I have to say that.
That's right.
Because of people don't want to talk about this. And I said it's a very complex issue because there is a series of court cases that are involved here. But the President has taken executive action on this. I'll let Jordan explain it. We'll take your calls at 800-684-3110 on all of this.
Yeah, so President Trump issued executive order. It's called the Affording Congress an Opportunity to Address Family Separation. It was signed yesterday, 2018, June 20th. And he says, by the authority vested in me as president, by the Constitution and laws of the United States of America, including the Immigration and Nationality Act, it is hereby ordered as follows, and this is the key point, Section 1. It is the policy of this administration to rigorously enforce our immigration laws. Under our laws, the only legal way for an alien to enter this country is at a designated port of entry at an appropriate time. The administration will initiate proceedings to enforce this and other criminal provisions of the INA until and unless Congress directs otherwise. It is also, and this is key, it is also the policy of this administration to maintain family unity, including by detaining alien families together where appropriate and consistent with law and available resources. So that resolves that key problem of families being separated. It resolves it by executive order. It was President Trump who should be given the credit because Congress failed to act. And even today, we heard from Paul Ryan, Congress is not going to be able to act today as well. So though this may face legal challenge, as of right now, families are being reunited. President Trump has spelled it out clearly that is the policy of the United States that while people are going through this process, they should be detained as families and not split up But keep the family unit.
All right, so Than, on the legislation front, then we're going to get to some calls and comments coming in. On the legislation front on the immigration, it sounded like to me, in listening to the comments of Paul Ryan this morning and even early this afternoon, that he is not optimistic that something's going to happen.
Yeah, Jay, as of this moment, they do not have the votes to pass either of these bills in the House of Representatives. They're actually taking a vote on the floor right now to pass the rule that will govern debate. And just so our listeners know what to look for, later on this evening, there will be those two votes, the first on a bill from Congressman Goodlatte, the second on a compromise bill that various factions of the Republican Party negotiated. Jay, the first vote is certainly going to fail. I can tell you that. The second vote, they are holding out some hope on, but I agree with you. As I watched that press conference, what I heard was the Speaker of the House saying, yet again, they do not have the votes to pass this legislation. The good news is, as Jordan just reported, this family separation issue, that has been resolved for now. So at least that issue appears to be off the table.
All right, we're taking your calls on both those issues and the United States pulling out of the UN Human Rights Council. We got an interesting question that came in from Facebook. This is Melody. She said, the UN HRC is always and has been counterproductive. Proud of this decision. But Sheila says, Jay, is the strongest nation in the world, why can't the U.S. just spearhead a UN overhaul? Now, what's interesting about that is it is complex. I do think, by the way, that the UN needs a complete overhaul. I've made a speech before the United Nations General Assembly in an event for Israel. And it's a pretty amazing thing when you see all these countries' representatives, and we've seen this in other times we've intervened in cases. But I will tell you this, it's in desperate need of overhaul, but you cannot ignore the entity itself. I think these calls to pull out of the UN are not wise. Reformation in the UN, a reform in the UN, a reconstruction of the UN, revisiting how it works, I think all of that is important. But I think we have to be realistic that we've got to maintain influence in the United Nations because of what can happen on the world stage.
Yeah, I mean, there's 193 members of the UN. So, I mean, that tells you alone why is it difficult to totally resolve things. But other than the 193 members, there's five permanent members of the Security Council with veto power. We're one of them, but again, we're just one. So we can work together with those other countries that have veto power, but we cannot do things unilaterally on our own except for exercise a veto and make decisions like we did with the Human Rights Council, as if, because we're the most powerful country in the world, we're no longer going to play your game. We're pulling out. We're not going to listen to your rhetoric. We're not going to listen to your condemnations and your resolutions, and we're certainly not going to keep funding your budget. So we're out. Goodbye, Human Rights Council.
Here's what Nikki Haley had to say about that.
We will continue to strongly advocate for reform of the Human Rights Council. Should it become reformed, we would be happy to rejoin it. America has a proud legacy as a champion of human rights, a proud legacy as the world's largest provider of humanitarian aid, and a proud legacy of liberating oppressed people and defeating tyranny throughout the world.
What you have to understand is that the Human Rights Council, and this is very important, I'm going to play you what President Trump had to say about this and also Boris Johnson, because Great Britain is weighing in on this, and they're not happy about what's called a standing item 7. And that standing item number 7, which has really created quite a bit of problems for Israel, and that's really what it's aimed at. Anyways, it's called Agenda Item 7, Human Rights Situation in Palestine and Other Occupied Arab Territories. Israel's the only country that has an entire agenda item dedicated to them at every UN Human Rights Council session. Let me say that again. The state of Israel is the only country in the world that has an entire agenda item dedicated to them at every UNHRC session. Now, 45 rockets were fired by Hamas day before yesterday, about 5 a.m. in the morning Israel time. If you have your red alert system, you know how that went. They poured in about a 2.5-hour period, mostly coming in from Gaza. Meanwhile, do you have resolutions against them in mass? No. But what you have is this. Right of the Palestinian people to self-determine, that's Resolution 3734. That was passed in March of 2018. Also March of 2018. Resolution 3735, human rights situation in the occupied Palestinian territory, including East Jerusalem, which, by the way, is legally, as we say in our book on Jerusalem, is legally Israel's territory. March 20, 2018, again. Resolution 3736, Israeli settlements in the occupied Palestinian territory, including East Jerusalem and the occupied Syrian Golan. I'm going to go through each one of these. 3737, ensuring accountability and justice for all violations of international law in the occupied Palestinian territory, including East Jerusalem. How many of these do you see on Hamas, by the way? Israeli settlements in the occupied Palestinian territories, including East Jerusalem and in the occupied Syrian Golan. That's Resolution 3431. This is going back to 2016. Resolution 3133, right of the Palestinian people to self-determination. On and on it goes. Meanwhile, rockets pouring in, hitting civilian targets. And what happens there? Nothing. No action by the Human Rights Council of any consequence. And, Than, this is the farce of the Human Rights Council.
Yeah, Agenda Item 7J is the structural reason that historically there have been more censures against the nation of Israel than all the other countries of the world combined. You can break it down a number of different ways. But here's a very telling statistic, Jay. During the first decade of the council's existence, there were 68 measures passed against Israel. Meanwhile, during that same decade, when these countries that I'm about to list had some very serious things going on, there was not a single one passed against China, Iraq, Pakistan, Russia, Somalia, Turkey, or Venezuela. In the first decade of the council, Jay. Meanwhile, 68 were passed against Israel. Agenda Item 7, that is one of the structural changes that Ambassador Haley and President Trump have insisted on if the United States is to rejoin the council, and absolutely they are correct. It needs to come off the agenda.
All right, here's what President Trump had to say about the UN and reformation generally.
The United Nations must reform if it is to be an effective partner in confronting threats to sovereignty, security, and prosperity.
But then, surprisingly, Boris Johnson, Foreign Secretary of Great Britain, talking about this agenda item number 7. You're not getting a lot of discussions of this in most media sources, but we're breaking this down for you. This is the anti-Israel agenda item on every UNHRC meeting. Here's what Boris Johnson from Great Britain had to say.
I share the view that a dedicated agenda item focused solely on Israel and the occupied Palestinian territories is disproportionate and damaging to the cause of peace. And unless things change, we shall move next year to vote against all resolutions introduced under item 7.
There you go. So world opinion starting to change. Your voice makes a huge difference in this. So we're taking your calls at 1-800-684-3110. When we come back from the break, we're also going to get into the immigration issue. Where are we now with all of this going on? Again, we're taking your calls at 1-800-684-3110. We've been talking a lot in the first two segments here about Israel. Don't forget our book, Jerusalem, is now available at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, wherever you get your books. I think 100,000 copies have been distributed in just the first 6 weeks of this book, so we encourage you to do that. And you can get that. You'll be able to get it at ACLJ.org very soon as well, a special copy that we have for our members. But anyways, we'll be taking your calls at 1-800-684-3110 and encourage you to support the work of the ACLJ at ACLJ.org. That's ACLJ.org. We'll be back with your calls at 1-800-684-3110. Back with more in a moment.
It's a historic move. Now the United States has moved its embassy in Israel from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem, Israel's true capital. The state of Israel and its very right to exist is a linchpin issue not only in the Middle East, but represents a critical issue to the world at large. Israel is facing unprecedented challenges. Enemies abound. ISIS, Hamas, Hezbollah, and Iran all pledge to wipe Israel from the face of the earth. In his new book, New York Times bestselling author Jay Sekulow presents a powerful political and historical rationale for the existence of Israel as a sovereign nation. Jerusalem, a biblical and historical case for the Jewish capital, presents clear, irrefutable evidence to remove any doubt about Israel's right to exist. And the book dispels legal myths purported by Israel's enemies. Get your copy today, Jerusalem, a Biblical and Historical Case for the Jewish Capital. Available now at Amazon or Barnes & Noble. The life of an American pastor hangs in the balance. Pastor Andrew Brunson is on trial in Turkey. As you know, Pastor Andrew is facing charges of, quote, Christianization, on trial for simply living out his Christian faith. He could spend the rest of his life in a Turkish prison. At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're aggressively advocating for Pastor Andrew's freedom. We've mobilized our international offices. We're working directly with the State Department and alongside members of Congress. The Vice President is involved, and we've submitted a critical legal document to the United Nations. Stand with the American Center for Law and Justice. Fight for the freedom of Pastor Andrew. It's time to bring an end to this sham trial. It's time for Pastor Andrew to come home. Add your name to our petition right now online at aclj.org.
The president says that the United States is now out of the Human Rights Council, which is good. The president's decision comes following a year of tireless commitment to try to reform the United Nations by the United States and the Human Rights Council with no success. The administration believes that the withdrawal from the Human Rights Council will cast a spotlight on the urgent need for structural reform. The HRC has failed to live up to its purpose, serving as a shield for human rights violators and a megaphone for unfair bias against Israel. This is what the administration sent out. The fact of the matter is that the Human Rights Council passed 5 resolutions against Israel, more than the numbers passed against North Korea, Iran, and Syria combined. And they have had a series of issues that have developed over the course of the, I would say, last decade that have been troubling, to say the least. Andy, you need to turn your mic on if you're going to talk. And there you go. Let's go ahead, Andy. We know, for instance, an issue you're concerned, which has been Turkey. Turkey, of course, not even mentioned in any of these, with all their human rights violations, including the fact that we've raised the issue of Andrew Brunson multiple times.
Turkey is one of the foremost offenders in violations of human rights, and we can see this not only in the case of Pastor Brunson, which is an egregious violation that's been going on for well over a year, having this pastor locked up, being tried on these specious charges of conspiring to start a coup of Erdogan, who may not be reelected and have some serious problems.
Do you think that's possible?
I think it's very possible, although he's been buying off people at $200 a head to ensure his election, from what I gather. But the point is that why is Israel being constantly attacked by this so-called Human Rights Council? Well, what is the reason for this when countries like Turkey and Cuba and the Democratic Republic of the Congo and Nigeria and Afghanistan and all these other nations, Venezuela, get a pass? And finally, the United States has had the courage, through the through Ambassador Haley and at the leadership of President Trump, to say, we've had enough of this council. Yep. We don't want any part of it, and we're out of it.
Yeah, I think this was the right move at the right time. We got a question coming in on this. Let's go ahead and take it.
Christine calling in from Michigan on line one. Christine, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live. You're on the air.
Well,
hi, Christine.
Thank you very much for taking my call. I was pretty amazed that I got through. I guess my question, it's not really a question, it's just a comment. I think it's a really good move that President Trump pulled out of the UN. Again, the people that...
UN Human Rights Council, not the United Nations, the UN Human Rights Council.
Yeah,
right.
Human Rights Council. Yep. Yeah, I'm sorry, I should have clarified. I apologize.
Sure, no problem.
But I think it's a really good thing, because a lot of those countries that are on that have horrible human rights records.
Some of the worst in the world, actually. The UN has issued 70 resolutions targeting Israel. That's more than resolutions targeting, as I said, Israel, North Korea, Iran, and Syria combined. So you're right, Kristen. That's part of the problem here. And it wasn't self-correcting, Than. I mean, that's another part of this problem.
No, in fact, Ambassador Haley set out a year ago to reform the United Nations, including the Human Rights Council. She gave them a year to do it. They clearly didn't do it. I would say this, though, Jay, if you want to reform the United Nations, this is the way you go about it. You use U.S. leverage. You exert American leadership around the world. And look, you also have to make a distinction between things like the Security Council, where we have a veto, and the Human Rights Council, where we don't. So therefore, the worst human rights abusers were the ones enacting the human rights policy for the United Nations. It was time for the United States to go.
You know, we've been inside the UN. Jordan has, I have, Andy has, and we've been inside the UN. We know what goes on there. This is a very, very troubling institution. I don't think it's one we can leave, by the way, because it still affects world opinion, and we engage it. I mean, I'm holding in my hand, for our TV audiences, I'm holding in my hand our submissions. This is just from 1 month. This was May's. Now we've got a whole group of them coming in June. And there they are up on the screen for those that are watching on TV or Facebook. But the fact is, it's very, very troubling what has happened here.
Yeah, I mean, Pastor Brunson's daughter made an oral presentation to the UN Human Rights Council. I've made them before. We've had our European staff and other staffs make those presentations. I think it's key that nonprofit organizations, international organizations, like the European Center for Law and Justice, our affiliate in Europe, continue to engage. We do not represent a nation state, so we can make sure that that voice is loud and clear in that hall, even when a country like the United States feels like they've got to pull out for nation state concerns. We can still be there expressing the outrage at the condemnation of Israel, expressing the outrage at the treatment and the human rights abuses. And I will tell you, it's effective when you start speaking there. People do pay attention, even more so because we've got our European staff who gives a little bit of a different an angle to it, because they're used to just hearing the Americans complain. And when we've got our French staff and our staff from other countries do this, it's why our European Center for Law and Justice can play a very important role on international issues that you care deeply about, because they bring a different voice with the same message, but a different voice and tone that can oftentimes be more effective than our own.
All right, let's go take the call on line four.
Yeah, let's go to Alfred in Virginia on line four. Alfred, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live.
Hi, Alfred.
Thank you very much. Thank you for what you guys do.
Thanks.
I'm an American, originally from what we call today Southern Cameroon, and I'm worried because we're depending on the United States for leadership for the gross human rights violation that has been going on the last couple of years there. And when the U.S. pulls out of the Human Rights Commission, in my humble opinion, there is nothing left. You know, I mean, that, you know, what punch has that commission? You know, what?
Well, the reason that Alfred, that they pulled out, the United States pulled out, and the reason President Bush did not go in it, and then President Obama rejoined it, was they thought that when President Obama rejoined it, there would be some effort to curtail what was a clear, the only thing they do. I mean, the primary focus of them, of the organization, is to condemn Israel. So Andy's shaking his head. The name of the organization, UN's Human Rights Council, sounds high and lofty. But all it has become, Andy, is a targeting point aimed at Israel.
Well, if you look at the statistics, Jay, there's no doubt that that's what it is. If you look at all the resolutions that have been issued, the 28% of the 28 special sessions devoted human rights and abuses have been convened, with 29%, one-third focused on Israel. Syria, a violent human rights offender, is next with 5, and Burma with 2. So, I mean, this is an attack Israel council. That's all it is.
Yeah, so that's why there's been a pullout. But listen to what Nikki Haley had to say about that.
If the Human Rights Council is going to attack countries that uphold human rights and shield countries that abuse human rights, then America should not provide it with any credibility. Instead, we will continue to lead on human rights outside the misnamed Human Rights Council.
And that's what it is. Don't go by the name of the organization. And Israel, the state of Israel, provides more human rights and freedoms and liberties than anybody else in that region by multiple times.
Yeah, and what I was going to add to that, I think Nikki Haley is right, is that just because we are pulling out of the UN Human Rights Council does not mean we're not providing U.S. aid around the world. We are. And so the United States is still engaging in human rights programs, and we are still providing that humanitarian support that the caller talked about in Cameroon and South Cameroon. We're still there. We would still be there providing that support. We would just not be doing it through this mechanism of the UN Human Rights Council, which is really just a council that passes resolutions and makes condemnations. They don't spend the money and the resources necessary on the ground. The U.S. does that and will continue to do that.
All right, we're going to be taking a break. When we come back, we're going to get into the executive order on the immigration issue and family separation signed by the president yesterday, and that problem Congress needs to act, though. We'll talk about all of that when we come back from the break. We'll take your calls at 800-684-3110. If you don't get the next 30 minutes, go over to Facebook or Periscope. Just put in Jay Sekulow, and there we are, or ACLJ.org. And don't forget, support the work of the ACLJ. You can do that also at ACLJ.org. That's ACLJ.org.
The life of an American pastor hangs in the balance. Pastor Andrew Brunson is on trial in Turkey. We're working directly with the State Department and alongside members of Congress. The Vice President is involved. Stand with the American Center for Law and Justice. Fight for the freedom of Pastor Andrew. It's time to bring an end to this sham trial. It's time for Pastor Andrew to come home. Add your name to our petition right now online at ACLJ.org.
So yesterday, after we went off the air, the President of the United States, President Trump, signed an executive order saying it is the policy of this administration to rigorously enforce our immigration laws. Under our laws, the only legal way for an alien to enter the country is at a designated port of entry at an appropriate time. The administration will also initiate proceedings to enforce this and other criminal provisions of the INA until and unless Congress directs otherwise. It is also the policy of this administration to maintain family unity, including by detaining alien families together where appropriate and consistent with laws and available resources. That was signed by the president. It's not so easy, though. I'm glad the president took this action, something we encouraged. But one of the difficulties here is the fact that there's a court opinion that says you can't do it. That you don't want children that are deemed to be in custody. That's the problem, Jordan.
Yeah, so you've got this situation here, which confuses things on the border especially, where you've got a law that says, a court order says you don't keep children in prison, basically, because of their parents' action, even though in this situation they may be deported as well. So just because they were, are minors, does not mean this is not the dreamer scenario where they got through and have been living here for years. They got caught at the border. They will be deported. The question is, where should they be held? And it looked very inhumanitarian to keep them separated and put with like foster families in the United States away from their families when the deportation should be happening very quickly.
We Unless should they be legitimately sending, qualify for asylum.
Yeah, we should be sending down 100-plus judges
to review this.
Do this very quickly and get this done and make sure that these processes are put in place again so this does not happen again. But Congress is just not acting as usual, even on something as simple as it seems as fixing this problem.
All right, so Than, we've got two bills that were supposed to be going to the floor right now. And by the way, we urged that this family unity protection be put in place so the executive order does that. You got this complicating court proceeding, so we'll see what that does. But we also have been urging comprehensive immigration reform. Sounds like to me what I heard before we went on the air, and you've been following it while we've been on the air, that doesn't seem to be very promising right now.
It doesn't look optimistic, Jay. They did pass the procedural vote that was required to get on the bills and debate them. The final votes will be later this evening. But, Jay, it does not look to me like either of the bills has a chance to pass. And, look, we've got to say it very plainly. The president did everything he could. He went as far as he could. He even instructed the attorney general to try to get that settlement agreement modified so that it would be permanent. This is everything that he can do. The Congress needs to pass a permanent solution. They will have their first opportunity tonight, probably between about 5 and 6 o'clock Eastern, Jay. But I will tell you, even Speaker Ryan, as of this moment, he concedes they do not have the votes to pass this legislation at this moment.
Harriet, what's your view of the situation right now?
Well, Jay, the problem of immigration has plagued many administrations for decades. There has been a distinct lack of political courage needed to fix the broken system. We hope Congress can match President Trump's action by actually implementing legislation that deals in a comprehensive way with the problem. But I believe today's Congress will likely confirm its ineptitude with respect to the immigration issue. And so that is the real problem. Congress has a distinct inability to fix obvious problems that have been around for decades.
A distinct inability. There you go. Good use of words there. Andy, you've dealt with this issue as a prosecutor, and you know what it is. And people need to understand the human suffering that these kids are in, and the we talk about the sex trafficking coming in the border. This is a real issue.
It's a serious issue. It's a real issue. And as my learned colleague and friend, Professor Hutchison, says, Congress has shown its distinct inability. I say ineptitude and stupidity in being able to grapple with these problems. But I have seen these immigration issues on a first-hand basis in the onion fields of South Georgia, where children are living in abandoned vehicles and are picking Vidalia onions at a childhood age, and they shouldn't be doing that. And that and they're part of the trafficking and smuggling of children that's going on in massive quantities. Congress needs to act. The president has done his part. Right or wrong, he did something.
Congress needs to act. When we get back from the break, we're going to talk about that. We'll take your calls. Lines are jammed right now, 1-800-684-3110. We'll get the calls as soon as we come back.
The life of an American pastor hangs in the balance. Pastor Andrew Brunson is on trial in Turkey. As you know, Pastor Andrew is facing charges of, quote, Christianization, on trial for simply living out his Christian faith. He could spend the rest of his life in a Turkish prison. At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're aggressively advocating for Pastor Andrew's freedom. We've mobilized our international offices. We're working directly with the State Department and alongside members of Congress. The Vice President is involved, and we've submitted a critical legal document to the United Nations. Stand with the American Center for Law and Justice. Fight for the freedom of Pastor Andrew. It's time to bring an end to this sham trial. It's time for Pastor Andrew to come home. Add your name to our petition right now online at aclj.org. It's a historic move. Now the United States has moved its embassy in Israel from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem, Israel's true capital. The state of Israel and its very right to exist is a linchpin issue not only in the Middle East, but represents a critical issue to the world at large. Israel is facing unprecedented challenges. Enemies abound. ISIS, Hamas, Hezbollah, and Iran all pledge to wipe Israel from the face of the earth. In his new book, New York Times bestselling author Jay Sekulow presents a powerful political and historical rationale for the existence of Israel as a sovereign nation. Jerusalem, a biblical and historical case for the Jewish capital, presents clear, irrefutable evidence to remove any doubt about Israel's right to exist. And the book dispels legal myths purported by Israel's enemies. Get your copy today, Jerusalem, a Biblical and Historical Case for the Jewish Capital. Available now at Amazon or Barnes & Noble.
Hey, welcome back to the broadcast, everyone. We're taking your calls. 1-800-684-3110, 800-684-3110. President signs an executive order on the family separation issue, which we think is good. We got a lot of calls coming in. Let's go right to them.
Ron calling in from Washington State on line one. Ron, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live.
Hi, Ron.
Hi, Jay. Thanks for all you guys do.
Sure.
My question is, if the presidential executive order for those fleeing persecution and asylum were only eligible when they come through a port of entry, period, and everyone else crossing the border illegally was immediately set back, that would stop the child trafficking and close the border down, which is border security, which is what the president wants. And it would disincentivize the illegal crossing, and it would also shorten the wait times for the cases that are legitimately people crossing the border for asylum.
Yeah, so you raise, Ron, listen, you raise a really important point. We talked about this before from a policy perspective, and I'll start with Jordan, but I want to get Harry's comment on this too. We think that what needs to happen, look, there may well be, and we have asylum laws in the United States to protect people fleeing persecution, and we should have that. We're the United States of America, we do that. So the way to determine an asylum petition, and there's, Jordan will give you, there's standards you have to meet, is to have judges that are available on the point of entries or wherever the area is to quickly adjudicate these. To determine whether the person needs, in fact, asylum, at which point they can be taken in. Granted, usually a preliminary asylum application granted, then a permanent, and take this process forward to protect the families, including the children, for those that are legitimately seeking asylum. But there's a statute that governs all this.
And it's been narrowed just recently by the Attorney General Sessions. So before, issues like domestic violence were grounds for asylum. That is no longer. Issues like gang violence, domestic gang violence being targeted, that is no longer. So you've got to meet criteria. And the biggest part is that your life is in danger. So your life must be in danger, your livelihood. And it must be because of your religion, something that has to do with you personally,
race, religion,
a trait that you technically can't change. So Yes, if your sex, if you're male or a woman, your religious belief, just something about you,
mutable
your national origin,
right.
A unique characteristic about you that puts your life in jeopardy. It has been narrowed most recently by this administration, so it's become tougher to claim asylum. And one ground that is never accepted is economic hardship. That is never accepted as a claim for asylum, or else the whole world could claim asylum.
Yeah. Harry?
Well, essentially, I agree with Jordan. One of the things that we should do, however, is we should move, as Jordan suggested earlier, more judges to the border so that we can process these petitions more quickly. In addition, we should ensure that DNA testing, for instance, is available with respect to this whole family separation issue. That needs to be moved to the front of the table. And thirdly, of course, we need overall immigration reform. And again, we have to continue to attack Congress for their inability to move forward.
Well, you know, Fan, it's very depressing when you tell us that, and of course, we've been in favor of comprehensive immigration. That's the position of the American Center for Law and Justice. But that you can't even get movement on this. They got two bills that are going to go nowhere, basically.
It's depressing, Jay, because the problems that Harry and Jordan are talking about, the fact that, you know, the overwhelming number of people that are given a court date, then they don't even show up for the court date. You know, Jay, you do have to expedite it, like Jordan said, but you also have to make sure that you can control the volume coming over the border. That's what the president's trying to do with the wall and border enforcement. The left in Washington, D.C. is not interested in having that conversation. And frankly, the right can't come together and agree on what the compromise is. That's a sad day.
Let me ask you this, Andy. We talk about getting judges on the border, which I think is something that can be. These are not Article III judges.
No.
So it's not judges that are like a U.S. District Court judge. These are administrative law judges. So they work for the executive. So technically, the president, if the budget's there, could move that asset in place to get quick adjudication.
That's right. They don't have to be approved or confirmed by the Senate. They're administrative judges. They're part of the executive branch of government. The president could designate as many as he wants to, subject, of course, to budgetary constraints. Get them down there and give these people due process. I mean, give them the hearings that they're entitled to. Give them the determinations that they're entitled to make these asylum determinations and other determinations, and then process these. There's not that many that it can't be done if someone has the will to appoint the magistrates to do it.
Exactly right. All right, let's go ahead and take another call.
Felicia's calling in from Arizona on line 5. Felicia, welcome to JSEC Hill Live.
Hi, Felicia.
Well, hello. Thank you so much for taking my call. I have a question, then a comment. My question is, what do they expect us to do with all the children who were brought across the border without a parent? I mean, I've lived on the Yuma border.
Yep.
It's horrible. I live in Gilbert now. I drive through town. There's tons of people at, you know, convenience stores, gas stations, hanging out, looking for work.
Yep.
And just yesterday, I saw a family, suitcases in tow, little kids, 105 degrees, walking down the road to nowhere. I mean, what do they want? I mean, what do they expect is going to happen to them if we just let them across and turn them loose and there's nowhere for them to go?
We have to have a system in place that encourages legal immigration within a system and framework so that families are not dragging suitcases. Look, my grandfather dragged suitcases with his family when he came through Ellis Island, and many of you that are listening to this broadcast have similar histories in your family. But we are the United States of America. We can do better than this. We can figure this out. I don't think it's realistic. I've said it yesterday. I'm going to say it again today. You're not self-deporting 12 million to 20 million people that are here illegally and have been here for two decades, and their kids have grown up here. And the other aspect of that is I'd rather have them a pathway to citizenship. It may take a long time, 14 years for my grandfather, but so that also they're taxpaying citizens of the United States of America. And wouldn't it be great for conservatives like us to figure out how to fix this? We've tried before, and it was blocked by the Democrats. And I have friends of mine that are Democrats aren't going to like to hear that. But then there was a comprehensive immigration bill put forward by President Bush and Harry Reid, and I worked on it. Harry Reid blocked it.
Yeah, filibustered it, Jay. And also, yep. I would say this. When President Obama came into office and had both chambers of the United States Congress and the United States
did
Senate,
nothing.
He did not make it a priority in his first 2 years. He focused
right.
on Obamacare instead. Jay, one other point I'd make. It's going to be impossible to enact the reforms and the improvements to the legal process that you are advocating for unless if the system is being swamped by the illegal process. That's why President Trump has focused on that first. He, like you, wants to improve the legal process, but if you can't control the illegal process, you're never going to get it done.
Here's what the president said, number two.
I didn't like the sight or the feeling of families being separated. Is a problem that's gone on for many years, as you know, for many administrations, and we're working very hard on immigration. It's been just left out in the cold. People haven't dealt with it, and we are dealing with it.
All right, we're going to take another call. 1-800-684-3110 is the number. We're trying to get through as many as we can so we can keep the lines open for you. Let's go ahead and take another one, Jordan.
Megan called in from North Carolina online through the good question about a legal challenge to the president's executive order.
Megan.
Yes. Hi, guys.
Hi.
Thanks for everything you do.
Sure.
My question is, if litigation is taken against the president's
yep.
executive order on immigration, will families get separated again until it's resolved?
Could be. And I think there's already legal challenges, and whether this is used to force Congress to act, that's why I'm saying, Congress, listen, you need to act, because these executive orders can be subject to challenge. I mean, Jordan, we've looked at these challenges before. Andy has, too. I mean, they are subject to challenge.
That's right. Always subject to challenge, and especially when it comes to immigration. And when it comes to where there is a law on the books, which, again, may not work great for this situation, so it would depend on how the courts interpret it. But, again, the easiest thing would be is that in the time period between a lawsuit to happen and this executive order is for Congress to act, and then the lawsuit would be moot. There would be no need, and Congress could do something very simple and say that you know, we're not going to allow this policy of family separation when it comes to border detention. It doesn't have to be all prison detention, but border detention. I think you could solve it right there. Let's grab, I'll try to grab these last two calls of the day. Andrea,
no, we got another segment to go.
Oh, yeah. Andrea in Texas online, too. Andrea, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live.
Andrea.
Hi there. Yes, I just wanted to say on behalf of the Americans, it's just a breath of fresh air to finally have leadership that actually cares about the well-being of Americans. So that's all I wanted to say. I'm really proud of our leadership. Finally, someone cares enough to do something.
Well,
so
that leadership needs to include the United States Congress, Harry. They need to act.
Absolutely. So many elites believe that we live in a borderless world. We do not. We cannot. Because a borderless world adversely affects middle and lower income individuals as opposed to elites who live in this fantasy world. So Congress needs to act, and it needs to act now.
All right, we're going to take your calls at 1-800-684-3110, 800-684-3110. We're coming into the last segment of the broadcast. We'll talk about the UN situation. We'll talk about the executive order on immigration. So our phone lines are open for you at 1-800-684-3110. Let me also remind you, our book on Jerusalem is available now on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, wherever you get your books. And your support of the American Center for Law and Justice allows us to do this work here in the United States, but also around the world. That encourages, we're encouraging Congress to take action on this immigration issue. This executive order, in our view, is a short-term fix to a long-term problem. We need an actual movement on this. Very, very important. We'll take your calls at 800-684-3110. Coming back from the break.
It's a historic move. Now the United States has moved its embassy in Israel from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem, Israel's true capital. The state of Israel and its very right to exist is a linchpin issue not only in the Middle East, but represents a critical issue to the world at large. Israel is facing unprecedented challenges. Enemies abound. ISIS, Hamas, Hezbollah, and Iran all pledge to wipe Israel from the face of the earth. In his new book, New York Times bestselling author Jay Sekulow presents a powerful political and historical rationale for the existence of Israel as a sovereign nation. Jerusalem, a biblical and historical case for the Jewish capital, presents clear, irrefutable evidence to remove any doubt about Israel's right to exist. And the book dispels legal myths purported by Israel's enemies. Get your copy today, Jerusalem, a Biblical and Historical Case for the Jewish Capital. Available now at Amazon or Barnes & Noble. The life of an American pastor hangs in the balance. Pastor Andrew Brunson is on trial in Turkey. As you know, Pastor Andrew is facing charges of, quote, Christianization, on trial for simply living out his Christian faith. He could spend the rest of his life in a Turkish prison. At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're aggressively advocating for Pastor Andrew's freedom. We've mobilized our international offices. We're working directly with the State Department and alongside members of Congress. The Vice President is involved, and we've submitted a critical legal document to the United Nations. Stand with the American Center for Law and Justice. Fight for the freedom of Pastor Andrew. It's time to bring an end to this sham trial. It's time for Pastor Andrew to come home. Add your name to our petition right now online at aclj.org.
Segment of the broadcast, we take your calls on any of the topics we discussed. I want to, before we take our first call coming in for this segment, I want to go to Than Bennett in Washington to get the latest on the immigration impasse. That's what I'm going to call it.
Well, they're debating it on the floor of the United States House right now, Jay. Both of the measures that they'll be voting on later, one from Chairman Goodlatte and one a compromise bill. Jay, I'm still hearing that both bills are still well short of passing. I would say this to you. The compromise bill that has been negotiated inside the Republican conference, Jay, that needs to pass. It includes all four pillars that the president put forward.
What are those?
It also includes... It's the wall, the funding for the wall, $25 billion for the wall. It includes the DACA solution that the president asked for. It includes a beginning of the rollback of chain migration. And, Jay, it includes an end to the diversity visa lottery. All four of those are in there, as well as a solution to the family separation issue that would be statutory and permanent. It should pass.
Yeah, but it can't even pass in a Republican-controlled House of Representatives.
No, I mean, that is the
biggest
issue.
That's what's so absurd here.
Biggest issue here is that you've got a House of Representatives that can't move this on to the U.S. Senate, where, yes, it would be much more difficult in an uphill battle, but we can't get it through the House of Representatives. So the president has had to act unilaterally because of this horrendous scene that we saw on our southern border with these families and these children being separated from their families in these detention facilities. This, again, based off a law that was being applied to really like a prison situation, and instead that applied to these detention facilities. Most of these families are going to be sent back and deported together, and they should be together, and that should be done together, not lost across the country in these different places they may be. Some may get asylum claims, but the vast majority will be deported back, and because of the way they arrived. If you got judges down there doing their job, this could be handled very quickly. But those other reforms that you think would be so easy?
They can't get through. The judges down there, Andy, though, would solve this. If we moved these Article II judges, administrative law judges down there, you could quickly resolve these issues.
Yes, you could. You would have an adjudication made by a magistrate pursuant to the law that says, well, okay, I'm going to determine your individual case and make a determination as to whether or not you are entitled to come into the United States or not. Why aren't we doing that? We need to these adjudications. Under the Flores v. Sessions settlement that I read yesterday, Judge G. in California, that they're now talking about trying to modify that. I don't know whether she'll modify that or not.
What did it say?
Basically, it says you can't keep children in jails, what it says, and you've got to keep, you know, you've got to keep them separate from adult facilities, which is a good decision. It was a good decision.
Yes, but the problem is the way this is, these shouldn't be jails in the first place.
That's
they're,
right.
They're centered. I don't... Look, there's nothing about this I like, and I don't like that Congress isn't fixing it, but we're taking your calls in this last segment of the broadcast on this, on also on the UN Human Rights Council. Let's go right back to the phones.
Yep, let's go to Julia in California on line four. Julia, welcome. And Julie, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live.
Hi, Julie.
Thank you, Jordan. Hi, Jay.
Hey.
My question's about the United Nations Human Rights Council.
Yep.
The past few months, you've been saying that just like night follows day,
yep,
Hamas in the Gaza Strip send civilians as human shields to the border of Israel. They try and cross the border. They get film footage. And then Gaza can't bring it, but the United Nations or another country can bring it to the United Nations and say, we're going to condemn Israel for violating human rights. Is that the body they use, the Human Rights Council?
That is their vehicle of choice inside the United States. I mean, sometimes they try the General Assembly. The problem is, then, the General Assembly, we can veto the United States. So the UN Human Rights Council, we don't have a veto.
That's right. That's why they prefer the Human Rights Council. They try it in all of them, Jay, but this is why we're still a member of the Security Council, because we have one of those five permanent vetoes. At the Human Rights Council, it's just a majority goes, and you went through some of that membership, Jay. I mean, what do you think those countries are going to vote for? They're going to vote in defense of the abusers, because guess what? They are human rights abusers as well.
That's exactly right. So the Human Rights Council is made up of human rights abusers. So, of course, they're going to go after... They're going to protect other human rights abusers. You take a look at the situation in the Gaza, Harry, that from a policy standpoint, I was there. I mean, Jordan's been there when the rockets have come in. But I was there during the Jerusalem dedication of the embassy. And immediately Gaza, they went to the border. They start sending over balloons that are fire balloons to burn areas. Rockets come in record numbers. My red alert the other night went off all night. And it was, I think, 45 missiles that came in, rockets came in a period of about 2.5 hours. Again, barely missing a school. But they're never going to say, the UN Human Rights Council will never say anything, because these are their allies.
Well, the Palestinians and Hamas in particular, but it also includes Hezbollah and Iranian allies in the region, they have launched a multifaceted war on Israel. This war on Israel includes something called lawfare. In other words, they continue to submit, in my opinion, farcical resolutions against Israel, and then they seek to sue Israel before the International Criminal Court. It is all designed to paralyze and cripple Israel.
Yeah, by the way, and we've defended Israel's position before the International Criminal Court, successfully, I might add, before the Office of the Prosecutor, so I've done that twice. We had two proceedings on that. So there you go. All right, let's go ahead and take another call.
Yep, let's go to Steve in California on line three. Steve, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live.
Hi, Steve.
Thank you, Jay. Jordan, good work, guys.
Thanks.
Keep it up. Hey, if we're withdrawing from the UN Human Rights Council, shouldn't we put teeth in that proclamation by withdrawing funding from that council as well?
So that funding has been withdrawn. I mean, it's a limited amount of specific funding, $17 million. It doesn't go to the general funding that we provide the UN, but $17 million that goes to specifically the UN Human Rights Council from the United States is gone now. That will not be utilized by the Human Rights Council anymore, unless we decide, as Nikki Haley said, our ambassador, that things are corrected and we rejoin. Pam is calling in from Pennsylvania on line two. Pam, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live.
Hi, Pam.
Hi, Jay. Hi,
yep.
Jordan. Thank you all for what you do. I appreciate that the president signed the executive order. On the vote today, my question's for Stan. What I've heard is some of the congressmen do not vote for it because they have not had a chance to read through it all. Is there...
They've had 5 years to read through it all. All right, go ahead, Than. That's a very good question, Pam.
I can give you a very simple answer. On the Democrat side, they don't like the wall. They don't like the border enforcement. And on the Republican side, Jay, quite honestly, there's an intra-conference squabble on how big the group that are DACA eligible will be provided a pathway to citizenship or legal status. It really is that simple. Democrats are opposed to the wall.
I mean,
Republicans can't agree on the DACA piece.
I mean, okay, I'm going to quickly go through here. My view is we've got to fix this. The conservatives... Fix immigration under conservatives. That would be good. That would be pro-family. Get it fixed. That simple. This internecine warfare that's going on in the party about whether this one or that one is ridiculous. And, I mean, they're fighting on the floor of the House, and it's embarrassing at this point. We need action. Jordan?
Yeah. I mean, it's a time when these excuses, like they can't read it. I mean, the executive order itself, you know, two pages being put together. This is long-term planning. Long-term, they've had these conferences and meetings. They've gone over and over and over it again, and they just refuse to take the action. They refuse to take the votes.
Yep.
And if a Republican House can't do it, then how do we expect a fairly divided U.S. Senate to do anything about it either?
All right,
and Andy? They won't have to, because nothing will come from the House.
Yep, Andy?
Fix it, vote on it, pass it, get it done.
Harry?
Absolutely agree with Andy.
All right, so folks, here's what it is. You need to call your congressman. And, Fan, give everybody the number. I think it's worth the call here. Let's see if we can maybe move this forward.
202-224-3121. 202-224-3121.
All right, everybody. That does it for the broadcast today. We'll talk to you tomorrow. But, again, let me encourage you here. Take action. We need action taken. Critical that we do it. Your support makes a big difference.
The life of an American pastor hangs in the balance. Pastor Andrew Brunson is on trial in Turkey. We're working directly with the State Department and alongside members of Congress. The Vice President is involved. Stand with the American Center for Law and Justice. Fight for the freedom of Pastor Andrew. It's time to bring an end to this sham trial. It's time for Pastor Andrew to come home. Add your name to our petition right now online at ACLJ.